Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. Joining us, as always, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm at AH Malcolm on X and Twitter. Welcome back, man.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, I think we're getting a couple of, I think we've got a couple of you in there. So we're good now. Twice the Andrew. Today we have twice the Andrew. All right. Well, we got a lot of things we can talk about. You've written about Gavin Newsom. We should really talk about Gavin Newsom's recent appearances here. We get the State of the Union address tomorrow, or as we're recording this, it'll be, you know, this will go up as a preview, basically, the State of the Union address, and whatever's going on with Iran and anything else that's on your mind. I mean, you've got a couple of really great VIP articles up there. Why are the media already creating so many 2028 presidential candidates? Because they need to sell. They need clicks. That was easy. No, I'm just kidding. So let's start there, because we can go from there into Gavin Newsom, then we can talk about the State of the Union address. Why do you think the media are creating so many 2028 presidential candidates?
Well, it's business. You know, there's a, I'm hearing an echo.
There's a little bit of an echo. We'll just work through it.
Okay. All right. First of all, it's a business. They get paid only by the number of people clear. So they want as many people as possible clicking, and what can get more clicks than Donald Trump and the people that might replace him? So I thought it would be interesting to see who the media, at least, are ginning up. They don't have to be a practical candidate. It's just to pick up to get clicks. So naturally, they ginned up Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And it was beautiful, the choreography of people that want to be mentioned. She went to Munich. I put this in the column. This is just part of it.
Well, yeah.
She went to Munich for some reason. And she said, well, the New York Times called her up. The New York Times, of course, loves her because clicks, and she's local. So they interviewed her, a guy who loves her, interviewed her, and said she was one of the best communicators in Congress. So she was complaining to him that she went there to talk about the class warfare and the need for equality and equivalency and, you know, the usual democratic socialist stuff. But a reporter, she claimed, came up to her and said, is Germany the new New Hampshire? And she said then, of course, she didn't have to answer him, but she did, denying, of course, to keep it going. No, not me. And so she complained that her main message was overshadowed by all this frantic media talk. And of course, she knew that by complaining, her name and potential president candidate would be mentioned. So it's one of these self-fulfilling things. It's fun to watch. It has no, I don't think it's going to affect the nomination process for the screwed up Democrat. First of all, she's too short to be president.
There is that, yes.
You know, seriously, if you go back recently, Jimmy Carter was the shortest one. The average of all the presidents is 5'11". Lincoln was the tallest at 6'4". Washington was close, and so was Trump. And she would be the shortest at 5'4". Of course, this is also Marco Rubio's, but he's 5'7". But he's smart. And that's what I said about AOC. I said, well, besides the height, then there's intelligence to consider. So anyway, I had some fun with looking at who they're throwing up. Gavin Newsom, of course, is one. J.B. Pritzker in Illinois, although that's a problem for him with all the high tax. And it looks like the Bears might be moving to Indiana.
It's a Hammond, right? To Hammond, Indiana.
Hammond, Indiana Bears. Of course, remember, at the very beginning of the NFL, they were the Decatur Staleys. So why not change it? The Los Angeles Rams moved all the time. They've been
well. They were originally the Cleveland Rams. They were originally the Cleveland Rams. Then they were LA Rams, St. Louis Rams,
and the Cleveland Rams left Cleveland, which opened the door for the Cleveland Browns in another league to join the NFL and win the championship in their first season. But then, of course, the Rams were in LA. And the first season, the Browns beat the Rams for the NFL championship. And then, of course, they went to St. Louis and then back to L.A. I don't know where they're going next.
What's interesting about the Chicago thing, though, is that normally these teams are threatening to leave over getting financing for the stadiums themselves. The Chicago Bears are going to spend their own money on a new stadium. They just want concessions on the land, sort of like what Stan Kroenke got to bring the Rams back, although he also got public financing for the stadium as well. They want concessions, like a 40-year freeze on valuations for tax purposes for the new stadium, because they're going to put, other businesses in there. They're going to build a business park. They want to build a retail area. It's going to make a lot of money for the owners, but also for the city as well, because they'll collect business taxes on all of this economic activity. And Chicago and the Illinois legislature can't even get a meeting together to discuss this thing. They had a meeting in the state legislature and they had to cancel it because they weren't ready to hold the meeting. And the whole thing sort of...
Well, the Bears, first of all, NFL teams, they're all, but Cleveland is moving out to the suburbs. They just built a new stadium a couple decades ago. So, but the idea now is to do what LA did with Staples Center, and that is you make the stadium the hub of a whole entertainment and commercial operation, which gets you everyday revenue, not just game. So the Bears, I think, are using Indiana. They already own a huge tract, I think 300 acres in Arlington Heights, which would be much more convenient for genuine Bears fans. They have to work out the tax stuff and all that. But it's these franchises began as, they were because rich guys or semi-rich guys, but they've become toys of billionaires and simply investment tools. The Cleveland team is owned by a Tennessee billionaire. Pittsburgh is local. The Green Bay is local.
Municipally owned. That's the only municipally owned sports franchise.
And the smallest media market too. Anyway, it's they become toys, so they're not the emotional hub or link for that they are for the local fans, and therefore it's not. I guess it would help the valuation if they were successful athletically, but it doesn't seem to matter as much as getting concessions and selling shirts and hats. And, you have to get seats. You have to buy a license.
Yeah, the seat licensing thing. What a joke.
Buy the seat. So,
yes.
Yeah.
What a racket that is. That's a racket. Come on, that's a racket.
There's an entrance fee to the grocery store you have to pay in order to buy lemons. It's just how much money do they need?
It's a great question. It's a great question, and I think they're sort of killing the golden goose here, which is, you know, the average fan being able to show up and enjoy a game. I mean, that's,
yeah. I mean, who can don't afford, have that. Who can afford? Plus the fact, I mean, I don't want to tip them off or anything, but it's much more fun to watch the game in comfort in your own home with all the different camera angle instead of having to adjust your binoculars looking at the field.
Yeah, I wonder if that's not the reason, though, that they're building the whole complex thing there, is that you go down there and you can do other things and watch the game. But yeah, I mean, that's sort of a baseball's a little bit better priced. Hockey's a little bit better priced for the fan. Basketball in the NFL, they're pricing the working class fan out of the stadiums these days.
Yeah.
And that's a huge issue. But to get back to presidential candidates, I mean, AOC has always been sort of a joke in these things, but Gavin Newsom, he's probably a front runner at least for 2028. He's out on tour. He's promoting a book that comes out tomorrow called Young Man in a Hurry, which he claims to have written, but now he told an audience this weekend, oh, I can't read. Now, he's dyslexic, which I think, you know, we have to throw this in here as an acknowledgement, but that's not really what he was saying in this appearance. He was talking about, oh, well, don't think I'm better than you. I only got a 960 SAT, and I, you know, I don't even read speeches because I really can't read speeches. And buy my book. But yeah. Buy my book, please.
Well, the writing a book is the giveaway for wanting to be seen as a candidate. Kamala Harris wrote a book. I think she's dead in the water as far as any political off, but she wants the talk to continue, keep her speaking rates up.
Yeah, exactly.
Until she drops out like she did in California governor's race. It's entertaining to watch. My gripe in the Sunday call was that they gin up stuff. You know, what if Joe Blow ran for president against Trump? As long as you get Trump in the headline, you'll get some traffic. That's the kind of phony stuff that bothers me. Then, but well, they've been running it. It takes, you remember, it's gotten longer. Trump's campaign for 2024 was the longest ever. Was way over 2 years. We're way over 2 years now. But he announced it. Gavin has been positioning himself. I'm sure he's lining up advisors. And Pritzker probably is too. He's got no personal money problem. And then there's Josh Shapiro, although he's Jewish and Democrats seem to have a problem with that because he supports Israel. And I'm sure there'll be some Democrat senator that will offer himself. That's where Democrats seem to go instinctively to look for candidates. It works so well with John Edwards in 2004. So it's fun to watch. It's entertaining. And in the middle of winter, what else you're going to do but gin up all kinds of possible people to beat up on Trump?
Well, exactly. I mean, we're in that period between the Super Bowl and the catchers and pitchers arriving at, for spring training. So, you know, this, which.
And the girlfriends arrive the next day.
Right, exactly. But we do have the Olympics, and we actually won. We beat Canada in both men's and women's hockey. It's the first time we've ever done that. It's the first time we've won the gold in hockey, men's gold in hockey, since the Miracle on Ice, 1980. It's 46 yeah. years. This year they let the NHL stars play in the Olympics. They do that on and off. This is one of the years that they decided to go ahead and do it again. So it's a little different than it was in 1980, because 1980 we were fielding amateurs against professional grade hockey players, and we won. This is a little different. The stakes are a little different. But still, I mean, it was a lot of fun for everybody except for MS Now and Don Lemon. I don't know. Did you see that thing with Don Lemon? No. Cash Patel being in the Cash Patel. So FBI director Cash Patel was in the locker room after the win. And he's in there, he's wearing a USA jersey, and he's guzzling a beer, and one of the players hung a gold medal around his neck, and he's dancing around with everybody else in the locker room. It's kind of cute. Nobody really cared about this until Carol Lanig, who used to be at the Washington Post, you know, wrote a tweet about it with a clip of him being in there saying that we are monitoring the situation and we'll have more soon. And it's like, monitoring what situation? Yeah. Cash Patel was there because the FBI helps provide counterterrorism and intelligence to protect the athletes and the attendees. Estimated 250,000 Americans were in Milan for the Olympics, right? So the FBI is a big part of that. And it had always been planned that Cash Patel was going to be there. So basically the guy got a chance to go to one of the events after work one day. I am not seeing a huge scandal here. I've been on business travel and I've gone to see a show. I was in Vegas once for a business trip, and I went to a show afterwards, and it was even a clean show. Not easy to find. It was actually Penn and Teller's show. That was great. It was awesome. Had a great time. I didn't see Blue Man Group, but I did see Penn and Teller when I was there. And it was on a business trip. And I'm thinking to myself, so what again is the issue here? What's the problem?
Well, you know, it was interesting this time, the of course, because they won, the American team, it's got a lot of love now. But even though they're professionals, they shunned the 4C to stay in the Olympic Village with all the other athletes. And they said that the winning and all the medal chatter got them pumped up. So that was neat, you know, to stay in a dorm room instead of the Four Seasons, which I love the Four Seasons.
Yeah, I mean, sure, I would make that choice, especially after hearing about some of the not this Olympics. We haven't heard too much about it this Olympics, but in previous Olympics, we've heard not great Yelp reviews, I guess you can say, of the of the athlete village accommodations. And I think I might have opted myself. I probably would have opted for the Four Seasons if it was an option for me.
Hockey is a different culture, and these guys have all come up from the junior league, which is real hard scrabble, traveling on the bus in the middle of the night, and working class stuff. And I've always thought that kept them more in touch or connection with fans. They're not separated by bodyguards, and they just seem to be more regular people. You see them when they come out of the locker room chatting with kids wearing their jersey and all that. They're not so separate as the other pros. So I wasn't too surprised to me that they chose to do that. It's kind of nice. It takes them back to the days when they weren't millionaires.
I was talking to somebody about that too, you know, which was that, you know, after some of the skiing events and a couple of the other individual events, you had, with some notable exceptions, you had some of these athletes going political, right? And talking about, you know, a couple of them said that they're, you know, didn't like what was happening in America. They're representing the country, but doesn't mean that they support everything America does, et cetera, which is fine, but there's really no need for that type of dialogue. Yeah. I mean, you're there as a representative of your country, just, and this is a media problem more than it's an athlete problem. I'll emphasize this. The media shouldn't even be asking these questions. These people are not running for office. Talk to them about their sport. Talk to them about their win. Don't talk to them about, you know, immigration policy or anything else like that. That's not what they're there for. And a couple of the athletes pushed back and said that exact same thing. This is not what I'm here for.
And they should. This is the same manufacturing traffic that I wrote about in the Kennedy column.
Right. Exactly. It's the exact same thing. But you know what? You didn't get that from, I don't think you got it from the women's hockey team, and you certainly didn't get it from the men's hockey team, which was very gung-ho. They were having a great time with Donald Trump on the phone. Donald Trump invited both teams to the State of the Union address, which takes place tomorrow. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Was joking around about the goal. He was joking around with the team. They were having a great time. Cash Patel was in there. When he invited him, he says, you know, Cash will make the arrangements. We'll send you a military plane. You'll love flying on a military plane. You never have to worry about the airports or the weather with military planes. You know, we'll get you right there. And Cash is like, yeah, I'm all over it, boss. I'm all over it, which is, you know, it's cute. It's fun. And that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be an escape. And I think it's because it's a team sport. And I think it's because it's a team sport that people understand it's not about the one person. It's about the whole thing. And I think that there's just more room in that paradigm to avoid the nonsense messaging type of stuff that would otherwise come up. And I'm curious as to whether or not you see the same sort of dynamic, or if I'm all wet.
No, it is. It is true. You saw the, I forget his name, Jack, who was the hero.
Jack Hughes, yeah. Jack,
his brother was there. The Kachuk brothers were there. It's the same kind of regular guy. And Jack Hughes was very eloquent about, we're here for a country, we love our country. And that's special. That hits the heartstrings for America. It's what Canadians do when they win. They think they own the sport, and this time they didn't. So it'll be a great identity crisis for Orlando.
You know, and just for the Americans who are triumphalist about this, you know, we took Canada down a peg. Let's remember how we felt when we lost basketball golds, and not just in 1972 when it was stolen, but couple other times when America didn't end up getting the gold in basketball, and have a little compassion for Canadian cousins who are definitely struggling a tiny bit with the idea of losing to the Americans in hockey. And I wrote about this today. I was joking around, because you know our friend John Andrasik, right? Yeah. Huge hockey fan. I mean, he named his act Five for Fighting because you get 5 minutes for fighting. That's the reason why Five for Fighting is called Five for Fighting. That's what he wanted to use for his brand, you know, for his brand, for his music. It's a hockey penalty. So he's really into it, right? So I made sure that when I was writing about this today, was that, you know, CBS. The nice thing about this is that other than MS Now or M Snow, as I call it, and HuffPost, most of the media were really in, they got into the whole, you know, go USA aspect of winning the gold. I couldn't find anything other than those, yeah, and Don Lemon, who were, you know, sourpusses about this. But CBS News, they did this whole thing and saying, you know, talking about Canada, you know, being the birthplace of hockey, and that's the reason why they're struggling with this. And I have that nit to pick with CBS News because hockey didn't get invented until Wayne Gretzky came to Los Angeles and married Janet Jones. Prior to that, it was called ice soccer. And
ice soccer.
I sent it over to John and sent me an LOL message back. ice soccer. It was ice soccer before Gretzky married Janet Jones. Anyway, but I mean, I was actually kind of happy with the way the media covered it. They were straightforward. They were, oh, this is great for America.
And I love the hat. Those drones following the bobsled. That was kind of cool.
Yeah. Oh, there's been some really interesting, you know, novelties in coverage here. And I haven't really watched much of the Olympics. I haven't watched any of the Olympics, but I follow it, you know, in the news. And so it was just nice that there was just straightforward coverage and America's happy about that. And this is great. Not America's happy about this, even though they are a racist nation on stolen land and are still unrepentant. That sort of coverage, thankfully, was mostly missing, except, you know, over at HuffPost and a couple of those places. Anyway, we got to talk about the State of the Union address. We have a few minutes left. That's coming up. It'll be tonight as this thing gets published, but on Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time, we're going to be doing live blogs at all the sites, including here at Hot Air. What do you think?
Can I just say that the C-SPAN will have totally uninterrupted, no commentary, no nothing but the straight State of the Union if you want it unfiltered.
Yeah, well, that's great. I don't have C-SPAN, so I'm gonna have to live with it probably on Fox.
How can you not have C-SPAN? That's
I don't have cable. I don't have cable. I cut the cable, so I'm just getting streaming services. And the package I got, the streaming package I got, doesn't include C-SPAN. So yeah, that's fine.
I think that's un-American. Well, anyway, you can go to c-span.org. Minutes afterwards and see the tape that everything is archived from 1986.
Yeah, it's a great service. It's a great website, great service. Absolutely. You know,
from a journalistic point, if you're signed for free membership, you can make your own video clips with your own select. Transcripts, and you want what did Hillary Clinton say about health care in June of 1994? All that stuff. So yeah, maybe that's too wonk.
Very valuable service. I mean, I don't think that there's going to be a whole lot here that's going to be a surprise in tomorrow night's State of the Union address.
It'll be interesting how he handles the Supreme Court tariff decision, because the justice, if they show up, will be sitting right in front of him, right below in front of him.
Well, I gotta say that, yeah, I mean, the tariff decision, he's clearly unhappy about the tariff decision, and I get that, but he was also clearly wrong on that, and I know people don't like to hear that, but that was a loser argument. It was never going to win. They were never going to carry the day on that. And it got as far as it got, mostly on chutzpah. And I did not expect anything else other than that. In fact, I think they kind of took it easy on him because they didn't actually mandate how to unwind it. They're leaving it up to him and Congress to figure out how to do that, which gives him some more flexibility. It also gives him more time. And so he can still use that to leverage more trade agreements in the meantime. But yeah, if anybody was expecting a different decision, it's only because you weren't paying attention. That was doomed, my fellow conservatives, from almost the word go. All right. Yeah, that's one thing to watch for, though. You're absolutely right. That's one thing to watch for. Is he going to pull a Barack Obama, right? Remember, we got all over Barack Obama because he went after the justices from the dais on Citizens United. And Alito said something. And people got really bent out of shape about that. We'll see. Hopefully, he's worked out the angst on that. Not hopeful about that, but hopefully he's worked out the angst on that. We haven't done anything with Rand yet, which tells me that we're not ready to do anything before the State of the Union address. I think whatever happens now, it's going to come after the State of the Union address. What are your expectations? My expectations of these things is never high because I don't like them in the first place.
I agree with you. Never high. In fact, until 1930, Woodrow Wilson, the State of the Union was largely delivered on paper in a carriage. But he was a professor and he liked to lecture. So he got up there. And then, of course, once radio and then television came along, there's no politician that's going to give up that opportunity to talk to, I think, 50, 60 million faces watching. So it tends to be hailing all the good things the president has done in the last year and all the exciting things he wants to do in the next year, very few of which ever get accomplished.
Yeah, it's basically a campaign speech. The first half of it's going to be, here are all the things I did. And here's the thing. He actually has a list of things that he's managed to do, right? That's a lot of different things. He's settled a half dozen conflicts, either just before or just after they broke out. We're still waiting on Gaza to see if that's actually a plus or not yet. But I mean, he can at least claim the fact that he was able to stop the fighting for a bit there. So he's got that to brag about. He's got other things to brag about. He's not going to get any cheers from Democrats about his work on the border, but he's shut down illegal immigration, border crossing altogether. That is a massive win for him. It's what he was elected to. It's what he's elected to do. I think that there's going to be things that we're going to see out of this that he's going to be able to say, hey, look, here's all the great stuff I've done. What do you think he's going to emphasize in the what's to come part of his speech?
Well, he should focus on the economy and not false claims about how great things are. I think if I was writing it, which I'm not, I wrote some state of the state, as you would admit that there are challenges with prices that went up during your predecessor's term and had yet to come down. But you'd also point out that wages have gone up X percent and hiring is good. The economy is growing. Inflation is at the target level. But he's got to drive that home. He's also got to drive home the border. Remember, that was issue number one in 2024. And voters' memories are short. So he needs to remind them about what you said was this tremendous accomplishment, hundreds of thousands every month coming across. And now a million have self-deported, and he's shipping out more. There's been some understandable controversy about the tactics. Some of the ICE agents may have exceeded there. But, they get goaded and prodded by these protesters. It's like talk about five for fighting in hockey. It's the retaliation that gets the penalty, not the initial penalty. The referees missed the start.
Right.
So anyway, he's got the drive. I would go visit the border and remark on how much more miles of fencing and talk with the agents about the new tech he's given them. I mean, they're shooting down drug drones coming across the fence. All kinds of stuff going on. I mean, he doesn't have to announce secrets, but the enforcement is good. He's got to remind people, and not just now, but all the way to the midterm.
Yep. I agree.
And the economy's got things to talk about, but he needs to talk about new things he's going to do. He's got people don't pay much attention because it helps him, but he's lowered drug prices with many companies, negotiated agreements, and so he's working hard on that, but he needs to make the message and not be distracted by things that come to his mind that he wants to give somebody a shot. Just focus focus on the facts.
Discipline. He needs discipline at the State of the Union address. By the way, really quickly, Democrats now are talking about doing a whole bunch of different responses. Abigail Spanberger, new governor in Virginia, has the official response coming. But apparently, because Democrat leadership doesn't want them protesting on the floor, some of them are just going to skip it and start doing their own responses.
Yeah.
I mean, State of the Union responses are basically a trap anyway, because there's no way to match the imperial grandeur, which, by the way, I hate State of the Union. It is the most anti-small R Republican thing we do. And I'm going to be a curmudgeon on that for the rest of my life. But the problem is that nothing that comes after that matches up with the optics of what preceded it. And I think, in my mind, splitting this up amongst a bunch of different people dilutes it even more. It makes them look more like ankle biters. If you had Spanberger being the only person up there, right, saying, here's the official response and that's it, it looks like an official response. It's never going to do as well as the main speech, but at least it's there. But basically, that's going to be lost, you know, as everyone from Eric Swalwell to Don Lemon will be giving the semi-official Democrat responses, and it's going to look like a bunch of ankle biters. Everybody has to take a nip.
That's right. Well, and that's what television has done. It's made almost everything a visual event. Photo ops replace substantive discussions. We're not going to change it, but television has changed it. Remember John Edwards fixing his hair? You never saw a picture of past presidents adjusting their wigs. That too detracts.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, that's it, except for the jokes. Well, actually, these may have been the jokes, but actual jokes.
Ankle biters is a great phrase. You got to use that. Use that in your wrap up time. I've got a couple. These are old. Jimmy Fallon said, an Illinois woman is auctioning President Obama's 2005 Chrysler. You can tell it's his genuine car because it starts off fast and it stalls for the rest of its life.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah. And this one is sort of Olympics. It's Letterman. He says, the Sochi Olympic Hotel, I think, is called the Two Seasons instead of a little chocolate mint on your pillow. The Russian maids leave a potato.
All right. Well, I got a couple for you here. Police officer pulls over this guy who's been weaving around on the road, and he says, he goes up to the guy's window and says, I need you to blow into a breathalyzer for me. And the man says, sorry, I can't do that. I'm an asthmatic. If I do that, I'll have a really bad asthma attack. And police officer says, fine, will you just come down to the station? You can give us a blood sample. And the man says, no, look, I'm a hemophiliac. If I do that, I'll bleed to death. And then police officer says, well, then you can give us a urine sample. He says, well, I'm a diabetic. And if I do that, I'll get really low blood sugar. And then he says, well, all right, step out of your car and walk on this little white line. He says, I can't do that, officer. And the officer says, why not? And he says, because I'm drunk. All right, one more. Let me find this one because this was pretty good. All right. So this man's unable to attend the funeral of a, you know, a beloved uncle. And so he calls up his blonde brother and says, look, you're going to be at Uncle Charlie's funeral, right? And the brother says, yeah. And he says, well, look, do something really nice for Uncle Charlie and send me the bill. And the blonde brother says, no problem. So later he gets a bill for $200. And the guy says, well, okay, must have been something nice. So he pays the bill. Well, then he gets another bill for $200. And he's like, well, I'm not necessarily sure, you know, what's going on, but I'll pay this one. Well, then he gets a third bill for $200 and he starts thinking, what is going on? So he calls up his brother and says, you know, what's with the bill? And he says, well, you told me to do something nice for Uncle Charlie at the funeral, right? And he says, yeah. He says, well, I rented him a tuxedo.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I tell you what, if I get buried in a suit and tie, I'm going to haunt my family.
Yeah, I've had that discussion with friends too, where they've said, and I've threatened them at times. I said, you keep talking like that to me, and I'm going to make sure they bury you in a suit and tie. It's like, don't you dare! Don't you dare!
I think we should stick with your Hawaiian shirts, Ed.
There you go. See, this is it right here. This is the colorful version of the That's Ed Morrissey it. Show
this
uniform.
This is the Ed we want to remember.
Well, let's hope that's a ways down the road. Let's hope that's a ways down the road for both of us. As always, it's great to sit down and discuss this stuff with the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm, A.H. Malcolm, on the Twitters, and also at RedState.com. Andrew Malcolm, well, we'll talk soon.
Yeah, next week. Next week. Can analyze how right we were about the State of the Union.
I have a feeling that we're going to be very right about the State of the Union because it's pretty much the same every single year. But we'll see. Andrew Malcolm, next week, same time.
Okay, bye. Thanks, everybody.